Let's read together 1 Kings chapter 9. In this chapter, we read about the Lord's second appearance to King Solomon and also about Solomon's activities to strengthen the kingdom of Israel. 1 Kings chapter 9, beginning at verse 1. And it came to pass, when Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house and all Solomon's desire which he wanted to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time, as he had appeared to him at Gibeon. And the Lord said to him, I have heard your prayer and your supplication that you have made before me. I have consecrated this house which you have built to put my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. Now if you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, You shall not fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. But if you or your sons at all turn from following me, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them, and this house which I have consecrated for my name I will cast out of my sight. Israel will be a proverb and a byword among all peoples. And as for this house, which is exalted, everyone who passes by it will be astonished and will hiss and say, Why has the Lord done thus to this land and to this house? Then they will answer, Because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt, and have embraced other gods, and worshiped them and served them. Therefore the Lord has brought all this calamity on them. Now it happened at the end of 20 years, when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. Hiram, the king of Tyre, had supplied Solomon with cedar and cypress and gold, as much as he desired, that King Solomon then gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. Then Hiram went from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, but they did not please him. So he said, What kind of cities are these which you have given me, my brother? And he called them the land of Kabul, as they are to this day. Then Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold, and this is the reason for the labor force which King Solomon raised, to build the house of the Lord, his own house, the Millo, the wall of Jerusalem, Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burned it with fire, had killed the Canaanites who dwelt in the city, and had given it as a dowry to his daughter, Solomon's wife. And Solomon built Gezer, lower Bethhoron, Baalath and Tadmor in the wilderness in the land of Judah. All the storage cities that Solomon had, cities for his chariots and cities for his cavalry, and whatever Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion. All the people who were left of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, who were not of the children of Israel, that is, their descendants who were left in the land after them, whom the children of Israel had not been able to destroy completely, from these Solomon raised forced labor, as it is to this day. But of the children of Israel, Solomon made no forced laborers, because they were men of war, and his servants, his officers, his captains, commanders of his chariots, and his cavalry. Others were chiefs of the officials who were over Solomon's work, 550 who ruled over the people who did the work. But Pharaoh's daughter came up from the city of David to her house, which Solomon had built for her. Then he built the Millo. Now 3 times a year Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar which he had built for the Lord, and he burned incense with them on the altar that was before the Lord. So he finished the temple. King Solomon also built a fleet of ships at Ezion-Geber, which is near Elath on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. Then Hiram sent his servants with the fleet, seamen who knew the sea, to work with the servants of Solomon. And they went to Ophir, and acquired 420 talents of gold from there, and brought it to King Solomon. Let's begin our study of 1 Kings chapter 9 with some background notes. Excavations in the area of Jerusalem, where archaeologists believe Solomon located his palace, have revealed a large stepstone structure, which they believe is the Millo that's mentioned here in verse 15 and verse 24. The word Millo literally means landfill, and this stone structure served as a retaining wall for ground which supported the royal buildings. Furthermore, on the east side of the old city of Jerusalem, there is a section of wall which archaeologists believe goes all the way back to King Solomon's time in support of verse 15 and the mention of the wall of Jerusalem there. Archaeology has also confirmed building activity around the time of Solomon at Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer, as we see in verse 15. In fact, the triple-chambered gates at the fortress cities of Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer are all similar in construction and point to the fact that these city gates and their associated walls were all strengthened during and after the reign of King Solomon. In support of verse 26, archaeology has shown that there was building activity at Ezion Geber at the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba of the Red Sea. In verse 11, we read that Hiram, king of Tyre, gave lumber and gold to King Solomon, and Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. Most likely, these cities were put up as security for the gold that Solomon was borrowing from King Hiram. In any case, Hiram did not like these cities and called them Kabul, or good for nothing. Now, one more background note. In verse 28, we read that they went to Ophir and acquired 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. 420 talents of gold, that's 16 tons of gold. Now, that's a lot of gold, isn't it? So now you'd like to know where Ophir is so that you could go and dig around there and see if there's any gold left, right? Well, I'm so sorry. We don't know where Ophir was. Maybe Arabia, maybe Africa, maybe India. Good luck. Well, so much for our background. Let's move now to our doctrinal or teaching points for this chapter. What's the Bible teaching us here? So doctrinal point number one, God's promises are unconditional and conditional. God's promises are unconditional and conditional. In verse 2, we read that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time. Remember, the first time was back in 1 Kings chapter 3, when the Lord told Solomon that he could ask for anything that he wanted. And Solomon chose wisdom, and God was pleased. Now the Lord appears the second time and makes a couple of promises to Solomon and the nation of Israel. This is in response to Solomon's great prayer at the time of the dedication of the temple, the prayer that we read in 1 Kings chapter 8. In verse 3, the Lord promises that his eye and heart will be continually focused on the place and the purpose of the temple. God's intent was for his name to be always in the midst of his people. Now notice two things about this promise. Number one, it was unconditional, no strings attached. And number two, it does not say that Solomon's temple would exist forever. No, in fact, verse 7 assures us that Solomon's temple would be destroyed. Now, how do we put these points together? We can be sure that the Jewish people and the Temple Mount in Jerusalem are still close to God's heart. His eye is on that people and that place, even though there is no temple in Jerusalem now. But there will be in the future. There are many prophetic passages of Scripture which indicate the temple will be rebuilt. The name of the Lord will yet be glorified in the nation of Israel. So verse 3 is an unconditional promise to Israel, even though the temple is not there now. Now this promise is not to be spiritualized away by making the church the new Israel or the new temple. No, this is an unconditional promise to Solomon and the nation of Israel. But now beginning with verse 4, we have a conditional promise. Solomon is told that if he and his sons would walk before the Lord in obedience, God's blessing on the nation would continue uninterrupted. But if they turned away from following the Lord and served other gods, then Israel would be cut off from the land and the temple would be destroyed. And we know that all of this sadly came true because of this conditional promise. But the story is not over yet because of the unconditional promise. Romans 11:25 says that blindness has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. There will be a spiritual revival in Israel in the future before the Lord returns to this earth, because the promises of God are unconditional as well as conditional. The same is true in our lives. God's promise of salvation, for example, to any believer is unconditional. Once you are in God's family, you are there unconditionally. The relationship is never broken. The Lord said that anyone who comes to him, he will by no means cast out. John 6:37. But God's promise of fellowship with a believer is conditional. Hebrews chapter 12 says that God must discipline his wayward children. Our close fellowship with the Lord depends on our walk with the Lord. So a believer's relationship with the Lord is unconditional, but a believer's fellowship with the Lord is conditional. The promises of God are both unconditional and conditional. Doctrinal point number two, man's disobedience is tolerated but not overlooked. Man's disobedience is tolerated but not overlooked. We see in this chapter that Solomon was not a perfect king. Yes, he made great sacrifices to the Lord 3 times a year, as we see in verse 25, but he disobeyed the Lord in a number of areas. For example, the 20 cities of Galilee that Solomon gave Hiram in verse 11. Even if they were only given as collateral, this was not the best decision on Solomon's part. This was giving away part of God's promised land. This could lead to all kinds of problems. And then we read in verse 16 that Solomon had married Pharaoh's daughter. This was obviously for political purposes, but it was wrong. God had told his people that they were not to intermarry with the surrounding pagan peoples. And then we read in verse 19 that Solomon built cities for his chariots and cities for his cavalry. This was in direct violation of the law of Deuteronomy 17:16, which said that the kings of Israel were not to multiply horses for themselves. They were to depend on the Lord for security. And all these sins led to further departure from the Lord, as we'll see. So how do we explain the fact that Solomon's kingdom prospered and reached its greatest glory under King Solomon? Answer: God's patience and long-suffering. The Lord tolerated Solomon's wrongdoing, but it was not overlooked. In fact, the rest of the story will show that Solomon reaped what he had sown. The same is true today. Just because a wayward believer is prosperous and doesn't seem to have any problems is not a sign of God's approval. God's discipline is not always immediate. Man's disobedience is tolerated but not overlooked. What about practical application from 1 Kings chapter 9? Will people scoff at the Lord's things because of you? Will people scoff at the Lord's things because of you? In verse 8, the Lord said that if Solomon and his sons did not walk with the Lord, the result would be that people would hiss or scoff at the Lord's land and the Lord's house. It came to pass, and it happens today as well. Think of the mockery and ridicule that takes place when a Christian is involved in an affair or financial scandal. And don't think it can't happen in your life. Let this question be a warning. Will people scoff at the Lord's things because of you?